Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Silvercrest Asset Management Group Incorporated first quarter webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. Before we begin, let me remind you that during today's Silvercrest conference call, we'll make forward-looking statements pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All statements other than statements of historical fact, including statements regarding future events and developments and Silvercrest's future performance, as well as management's current expectations, beliefs, plans, estimates, or projections relating to the future are forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are only predictions based on current expectations and projections about future events. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and there are important factors that could cause actual results, level of activity, performance, or achievements to differ materially to statements other than the statements made. Among these factors are fluctuations in quarterly and annual results, occurrence of net losses, adverse effects of management focusing on implementation of a growth strategy, failure to develop and maintain the Silvercrest brand, and other factors disclosed in the company's filings with the SEC, including those factors listed under the caption entitled Risk Factors in the company's annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2015, filed with the SEC. In some cases, these statements can be identified by forward-looking words such as believe, expect, anticipate, plan, estimate, likely, may, will, could, continue, project, predict, goal, the negative or plural of these words, and other similar expressions. These forward-looking statements are predictions based on Silvercrest's current expectations and its projections about future events. All forward-looking statements made on this call are made as of the date hereof, and Silvercrest assumes no obligation to update these forward-looking statements. I would like to turn the conference over to Rick Hough, Chairman and CEO. Sir, please begin.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us for the first quarter call of 2016. It was a difficult period for investing in the first quarter, as you well know, yet Silvercrest increased its discretionary assets under management, and we also increased our year-over-year top line and EBITDA growth while maintaining a solid pipeline of new business opportunities. In addition, Silvercrest's investment capabilities continued outperformance across the board, supporting many of our business development efforts. Our top-line revenue for the firm increased 10.5% for the quarter ended March 2016 versus March 2015, from $17.4 million to $19.3 million, due to organic growth, increase in institutional business, and our successful acquisition of Jamison, Eaton, and Wood. Our discretionary assets under management, which are primarily responsible for the firm's revenue, increased from $11.8 billion to $12.2 billion over the same year-over-year period from March 2015 to March 2016. The discretionary assets under management increased by $100 million during the first quarter of 2016. As discussed last quarter, our business opportunities reflect the maturity of our marketing efforts and investments in the business, and we continue to believe that our outperformance bodes well for future organic growth, both institutionally and with the high-net-worth families that we seek. The firm has ongoing potential acquisition opportunities, and we believe that, with one of the best and premier brands in the fast-growing RIA business, organic growth will continue to be supported by selective acquisitions as it has been in the past. With that, I'll turn it over to Scott Gerard for discussion of our financials before we take questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. As disclosed in our earnings release for the first quarter, discretionary AUM as of March 31, 2016 was $12.2 billion, and total AUM as of March 31, 2016 was $17 billion. Revenue for the quarter was $19.3 million, and reported consolidated net income for the quarter was $2.5 million. Revenue for the first quarter was $19.3 million, representing approximately an 11% increase over revenue of $17.4 million for the same period last year. This increase was driven primarily by growth in our management and advisory fees as a result of increased AUM. Expenses for the first quarter were $15.6 million, representing approximately an 18% increase from expenses of $13.3 million for the same period last year. This increase was primarily attributable to increases in compensation and benefits expense of $1.7 million and general and administrative expenses of $0.7 million. Compensation and benefits expense increased primarily because of higher equity-based compensation expense as a result of restricted stock unit grants that were made in August of 2015, increased salary expense as a result of both merit-based increases and increased headcount due to the Jamison acquisition, and an increase in the accrual for bonuses. General and administrative expenses increased primarily because of increased investment research costs, increased amortization expense related to intangibles acquired as part of the Jamison acquisition, and increased sub-advisory and referral fees. Reported consolidated net income was $2.5 million for the quarter, as compared to $2.8 million in the same period last year. Reported net income attributable to Silvercrest or to Class A shareholders for the first quarter of 2016 was $1.3 million, or 16 cents per basic and diluted Class A share. Adjusted EBITDA, which we define as EBITDA without giving effect to equity-based compensation expense and non-recurring items, was approximately $5.3 million, or 27.3% of revenue for the quarter, compared to $5 million, or 28.5% of revenue for the same period last year. Adjusted net income, which we define as net income without giving effect to non-recurring items and income tax expense, assuming a corporate rate of 40%, was $2.3 million for the quarter, or 18 cents per adjusted basic share and 17 cents per adjusted diluted share. Adjusted earnings per share is equal to adjusted net income divided by the actual Class A and Class B shares outstanding as of the end of the reporting period for basic adjusted EPS, and to the extent dilutive, we add unvested deferred equity units, restricted stock units, and performance units to the total shares outstanding to compute diluted adjusted EPS. Looking at the balance sheet, total assets were approximately $94 million as of March 31, 2016, compared to $108.2 million as of December 31, 2015. Cash and cash equivalents were $19.1 million at the end of the first quarter. That compared to $31.6 million at the end of last year. Notes payable was approximately $4.5 million at both March 31st, 2016, and at the end of last year. Total Class A stockholders' equity was $46.3 million at March 31st, 2016. That concludes my remarks, and I'll just briefly turn it back over to Rick before Q&A.
Thanks very much, Scott. We are prepared for questions, so I look forward to speaking with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, press the pound key. To ask a question, it's star, then one.
And last.
Our first question will come from the line of Michael Kim from Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Good morning. First, Rick, just any incremental color on the flow trends this quarter across the high net worth and the institutional sides of the business, particularly as it relates to the step up in outflows from existing accounts. I know you typically see some seasonal outflows in the second quarter, so just wondering what some of the underlying drivers may have been this past quarter.
Right. So there were a couple of closed accounts and related outflows. Some of the outflows include what was closed due to deaths. We had a couple of key clients die, and you know, trust and estate stuff gets split up. We don't always capture all of those assets, as you might expect. We still kept assets for other aspects of those families. So that was one piece of it. The second is the outflows for tax payments, and you'll see some in the second quarter, I would think. It just depending on the circumstances, those flows can come in the first quarter and they can come in the second. I know some of it definitely came in the first this year. And there have been past second quarters. I think one example may have been the second quarter of 2013. I don't have it in front of me, but if I recall, that may have actually been a positive, not negative. Second quarter of 2014 was highly negative, as was 15. I expect that to moderate a bit off of those for the second quarter of this year. So I don't think the outflows, given the deaths, were that unusual. Certainly, it's not due to losing clients or performance issues on that front. And I think some of it was tax getting ahead of the second quarter. If you want to look at history, it's best to look at the first and second quarter together to get a trend on that. With regards to inflows, the institutional business did quite well. It was fairly anemic on the high net worth side. We have a decent pipeline on the high net worth side, but you know, one never knows when that will fall, unlike an RFP for an institution where there's a deadline and they're choosing a manager. But as we had suspected, and our pipelines had grown back up with possible business opportunities in both the institutional and high net worth business. The institutional side of the business definitely delivered. We garnered four new institutions during the quarter and some meaningful assets.
Got it. That's helpful. And then just to follow up on investment performance, obviously the track records remain really strong across all six of your proprietary equity strategies. So just wondering how you may be thinking about more fully leveraging those track records, particularly as you kind of further penetrate the institutional channel?
Sure. So a couple of things of note. One is we really like not just the performance we've delivered, which has been highly consistent and disciplined over time, and is largely responsible, of course, for growth in the institutional business, but this kind of a market that we've been talking about over the past year, really. Last year was not easy for asset managers, and certainly the first quarter wasn't either. We're extremely proud to have navigated that well on behalf of our clients, and unlike many firms that saw a lot of redemptions and outflows who were more sensitive to retail markets, unlike Silvercrest, we did not see that as a result of difficult markets. Instead, what we saw was a number of value firms stub their toes, and to the extent we were able to outperform, I definitely think it provided some wind to our back and increased institutional interest in Silvercrest. To your specific question, small cap has really driven, as you know, the institutional business at Silvercrest. It continues to do so. However, given the strong performance across the board, SMID cap is something that we are talking to institutions about. Equity income has been extraordinarily strong. We were talking here amongst ourselves and the partners at Silvercrest about the fact that our equity income strategy has a 10-year history that if we were to net out fees would be one of the very top performing strategies in the entire country. That has interest. And in a potential low return environment looking forward, dividends and other means to enhance return as a component of total return are going to become more important, so we like some of the opportunities there. We have a MLP strategy that has obviously had some downdrafts in that market, as it has across the board. However, our relative performance has been excellent. I think that could have some interest going forward. So, you know, of the six, there's also a concentrated portfolio that could have interest going forward. So as we've expanded, we made investment in additional marketing in that area. That has paid off. The UMA accounts that follow our strategies have increased. The mutual fund that we sub-advise has increased and is now of a size that it's more marketable, and there have been changes at the fund manager level that we like and we think helps with potential. So there are lots of arrows in that quiver aside from small cap, and I think we're going to see a pretty good year in institutional management, as I said in our last conference call.
Got it. Okay. And then just maybe one for Scott. So looks like you called out some telephone system, software, and compliance-related costs last quarter. So just wondering if you expect those to recur as we look out into the second quarter and beyond, and any sort of incremental color around some of those costs.
Yeah, as far as the telephone cost, that's related to an implementation that we're currently undergoing. So, there could be some residual costs in the second quarter, but that eventually will phase out because that's an implementation.
Okay, and then sort of the other software compliance costs, don't expect those to recur either.
Yeah, we had a mock compliance audit that was a one-time cost, so that's finished.
This is Rick. The firm hasn't been examined by the SEC since 2006. We're not a priority for the SEC given our public company status and some other attributes that allows us to pass through the SEC screens without coming under undue scrutiny. With that amount of time between examinations, we thought it prudent on behalf of the business to examine ourselves independently as closely as possible should we face an exam.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for taking my questions.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one. Our next question will come from the line of Steven Schwartz from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Steve.
Hi. Hey, Rick. I got a few. First, maybe Scott, you could address fee rate. That was up in the fourth quarter, down in the first quarter. Really, the difference between my estimate and your results. I'm just wondering if anything was going on there that you could identify.
Really, as we had previously discussed, is mix. It's a bit of a mix, but not anything that's long-term, recurring or changes in the business. So, some of the, based on mix of AUM and, events that transpired during the quarter with respect to clients, you may have some, periodic, impacts. But as far as long-term or strategically, we haven't changed, any of our pricing standards or, how we, structure proposals with prospective clients or existing ones for that matter.
On that point, this is Rick, I would point out that across the industry there's been less interest in funds and fund management. So we're getting less in that area than we used to in the past. And, of course, we're growing institutional business and we've had some larger account size coming in. They're not getting better pricing than as compared with the past, but that mix does change the total fee basis a bit. It's in terms of the total price people are paying per AUM, if you were to look at the incoming business, I don't think we've changed or moved much at all. We were already highly competitive, so we're not facing the kind of fee compression you're seeing in some other places.
Okay, great. And then, Rick, could you address what this Cappuccelli does for you? I think I pronounced that right.
Sure. Mr. Cappuccelli is a tax accountant. He does planning and preparation. As you know, our family office services do that as well. I assume you brought up his name because we disclosed that we acquired his firm at the end of last year.
Yes.
We did that for a couple of reasons. It was a very small deal compared to the overall company, as you know. One, he and his staff are extraordinarily talented, and we wanted to continue building that piece of the business. Mr. Cappuccelli worked with many of the partners here at Silvercrest, as well as with people on existing family office team in the past. He himself had been at DLJ Asset Management. As you know, many of our partners came from DLJ Asset Management. In addition, he is looking for a transition of his business over time, which means a good home and transition for his clients. And many of his clients work with Silvercrest already, so there was an overlap there. So it was a means of coming together, getting some additional expertise. He's in New Jersey, so that gives us expertise as well in our New Jersey office and allows us to effect a transition for him, but more importantly for our mutual clients.
Okay. How many people on that team?
Three
people. Okay. And then one last one, realizing that you hardly make any money on it, discretionary AUM came down in the quarter?
Discretionary AUM, I
think. Non-discretionary, excuse me.
Yeah, non-discretionary came down. It had very little revenue impact.
Right.
Came down for two reasons. There's some very large blocks of stock that came down in the quarter that moved it down. And there was a client that changed how they do due diligence. That brought it down. It's a rounding error with regards to revenue. So big number, but it really doesn't affect things at the firm.
Right. I realize that. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
Thank you. At this time, I'm showing no further questions. I would like to turn the call back over to Rick Hough, Chairman and CEO, for any closing remarks.
Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us in the for our first quarter conference call. As I highlighted at the beginning of the call, and I hope explained in the question period, while the investing market was a difficult one in the first quarter, and we've seen a nice rebound in the second, I believe that our business pipeline and acquisition opportunities for the rest of the year look promising, as we've discussed in the past, and indeed on the institutional side, given the outperformance of our equity products, we are seeing that come to fruition. We hope to enhance that over the course of the year, either with an acquisition or some more meaningful institutional business. The high net worth side, as we've always talked, is unpredictable and lumpy, but that business opportunity pipeline also remains robust for the firm as compared with the third quarter of last year. It started to rebuild during the fourth quarter and into the first quarter, as we've discussed before. Thank you very much. I appreciate you joining us.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.